Bounce ball to the right. Hunter on the move. Racing back. It's over his head. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
This is Red Sox Beat on CLNS Radio.
I think it'd be a big statement if John Farrell started Travis Shaw on opening day. I'd be totally cool with it. Because I think if that doesn't give Sandoval motivation to play better defense and play better period, nothing will.
I think they're going to make Jeter the first unanimous vote. And I hate that about baseball writers. If you belong in the Hall of Fame, you get voted in the Hall of Fame.
Achievement or a new milestone. So don't just be like, hey, we found this player for a ceremony. No.
Now, to your hopes.
And welcome on into the show, everyone. CLNS Media here. This is Red Sox Beat. If you are noticing a face that's not here, then you're probably right. We're without Jared Scally tonight. We got Jess Thomas here alongside Lauren Campbell, per usual. Lauren, we'll get to you in a minute. But first, I want to let you know that this station here, CLNS Media, is the leading online provider for audiovisual coverage for New England professional sports. You can follow CLNS at CLNS Media now. Don't get confused with the old one. No more radio here. So CLNS Media, you can go on Facebook, CLNS Fans, same as before. And make sure you get the mobile app, the mobile podcast app for iOS and Android. Just go to CLNS on your app store and it'll pop up. And that's how I listen to all my stuff. So make sure that you do as well. For our show here, Red Sox Beat, you can follow on Twitter at @RedSox_Beat. Red Sox Beat Podcast on Facebook. We'd love for you to go on iTunes and rate, review, and subscribe our show. That would be wonderful as well. So here we are, another week, August 21st edition. Lauren, what's up?
Can't believe it's almost the end of August, heading into September. Can't believe I got another week right of predictions. Overall, I'm excited. I'm excited for this week ahead, excited for what we're about to talk about. I'm excited.
You should be excited. I can't believe you've gotten 2 weeks in a row. I've done terrible this year. I really am not holding out my end of the bargain like I did last year. It's, you know.
Nope, not at all. But now I've taken over. I'll gladly take that reign from you and help you out here this season. So you're welcome.
Well, as long as somebody gets it right, right? As long as one of us does. As long as it's not Jared, you know?
Okay.
I mean, we want Jared to do it right, obviously. Well, we're glad you're joining us here. We had a great show last week with Trenny Kuznarek of CSN on there. If you haven't checked that out, even though it's a week old, please make sure to still do that. Hopefully we can keep you entertained here for this week as we get to the end of August. Next week will be the last August show, and we'll be into September and getting closer to the end of the season here. So let's just jump in with the recap. We briefly mentioned Monday last week because the show was after that. It was the makeup game against the Indians. The Sox lost 7-3. We pretty much went over it. Doug Fister was not good, and Edwin Encarnacion hit two home runs. So that was pretty much what happened there. So let's move on to the good stuff, starting with Tuesday. That was against the St. Louis Cardinals. The first time the Cardinals played in Boston since 2008 in the regular season, and the first time since 2013. Of course, the Red Sox won the World Series against the Cardinals that year. I can talk about that all I want. So that was a great series. This is a regular season series, a little bit different, but nonetheless exciting. This matchup this night was Rick Porcello against Mike Leake, and spoiler alert, one of them was really good and one of them was really bad. Fortunately, the really bad one was the Cardinals. So in this one, Rafael Devers got an RBI single in the first inning to continue his torrid pace. That made it 1-0. But the big inning in this one was the fifth inning. Nobody scored until the fifth inning. It was still 1-0. Leake was rolling along, and then the Sox decided to put an 8 spot up on the Cardinals with a lot of hits. I'll just quickly detail the 8 runs here because, boy, it was insane. It was fast and a lot of hits. Not even any home runs was the funny part about it. And there was one out before anyone got on base. With one out, Eduardo Nunez hit a single, Mookie Betts hit a single, Andrew Benintendi had hit by a pitch. So bases loaded, one out, and then Hanley Ramirez hit a 2 RBI double to make it 3-0. Then they intentionally walked Rafael Devers because he's that good, even though he's only been here for a month, not even a month. And then it brought up Xander Bogaerts, who had been struggling, but he said, who cares? He hit an RBI single to make it 4-0. Then Mitch Moreland hit an RBI single to make it 5-0. Then Mike Leake came out, and then the reliever Bowman came in, gave up a 2-RBI double to Sandy Leone to make it 7-0. Then Jackie Bradley Jr. batting for the second time, got an RBI single to make it 8-0. And then Eduardo Nunez got an RBI single to make it 9-0. So it was 9-0 after 5. So if you're counting at home, 8 runs on 8 hits in that inning, and almost every single one of them was a single. It was 6 singles and 2 doubles. You don't see a lot of 8-run innings without a home run.
No, you don't. And it's funny because, you know, I was getting alert after alert on my phone, you know, Red Sox up by one more. This person got a single. Benintendi was hit by a pitch. And I was like, that thought crossed my mind. I'm like, there's been no home runs in this inning. It's all singles. It's all RBI extra base hits. That inning had everything to score except home runs. It was wild.
Yeah, it was fun. As a result, Mike Leake's final line was 4 1/3, 9 hits, 8 runs. Pretty bad. As a result, Rick Porcello got a little complacent, I'm sure, because now he had a 9-0 lead. So he gave up 3 runs in the top of the 6th inning to make it 9-3. But then the Sox got another one back in that same inning to make it 10-3. Final was 10-4. Porcello pitched 7 innings, gave up 8 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 6 Ks. Another good outing for him. It was his 3rd straight win at that point. And really, I mean, the offense was great in this game, and for me, it was like, finally, another more run support for Rick Porcello. It's finally happening. It only took till August, but it's happening now.
It's amazing that he can win when he gets run support.
Right? He gets run support, and he wins every game. It's like, wow. Almost like last year all over again.
Weird.
So, that was good. Multi-hit games in this game for Bogaerts, Moreland, Devers, Ramirez, and Nunez. So, a lot of hits. Almost everybody scored a run. The only guy in the starting 9 who didn't score a run was Bradley. Everybody else did. So this game was wild. It was awesome. So 10-4 win, courtesy of an 8-run 5th inning to take the first game against the Cardinals, which brought us into Wednesday's game, which was the second game of the series, and that was it because it was only a 2-game series, which we talked about before. We don't like because it's not enough time to really get to know your opponent or anything. Or, for that matter, predict, because it's 2 games and it's over. But regardless, this game was really interesting, I guess, was the best way to describe it. It was Eduardo Rodriguez against Lance Lynn. Lynn pitched a lot better than Rodriguez. But really, for Erod, it was just one bad inning, which was the second inning. He gave up 4 runs in the second. Colton Wong, RBI single. Luke Voit, RBI double. Colton Wong scored in a pass ball, and Matt Carpenter had an RBI single. So that was it, 4 runs, and Erod didn't give up another one after that. He went 5 1/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, 8 hits, 4 runs. Lynn went 6 innings and only gave up 1 earned run, 2 runs overall. Those 2 runs for the Sox were in the bottom of the 3rd on an infield single for Eduardo Nunez and a sac fly for Betts. That was it, 4-2. Nobody else scored in this game after the 3rd until the 9th, which is pretty wild. The Cardinals brought in Trevor Rosenthal, who used to be really good, and he's really not anymore. And he started off the inning giving up a solo home run to Xander Bogaerts, and that made it 4-3. And I was like, well, maybe there's a little bit of hope in this game to try to get the sweep. And then Rosenthal just fell apart. He walked Moreland, and then Chris Young ran for Moreland. And then Mike Matheny had seen enough. He brought in Zach Duke, who struck out Holt, who pinched hit. But then Jackie Bradley Jr. walked, and Mike Matheny was tired of him, too, so he brought in John Brebbia, who got Nunez to foul out. But then Mookie Betts got a 2-RBI double with the runners going on a 3-2 pitch. They both scored. Sox won 5-4. But before that even happened, Mike Matheny got thrown out of the game for arguing. So, really, I mean, what didn't this 9th inning have? I know you recapped the game, so I'd like you to talk about how insane this inning was.
It was funny because I'm sitting there, and I'm like, they have something going in the 9th, they need to get going. And it's, obviously it started off, like you said, with the Xander Bogaerts home run. So I'm like, that's a good sign because this guy so desperately needed a hit, a big hit in a big way. And obviously this is what it was. And then, you know, we talked a little bit about it in our chat. Like, Matheny takes forever to walk out to the mound. Kind of has that, like, pompous attitude walking out there. And, you know, finally it was just, he was mad that the umpire called time because you're just taking too long in between pitches. And I totally understand, like, getting set up or whatever, but you don't need to take as long as this person was taking. It was a long, long, long wait. So the umpire called time, Mike Matheny comes out. So first, Molina was losing his mind. His hands were up, you know, he was in the face. I'm surprised Molina didn't get ejected because he was, like, right here.
Well, that's the reason Matheny got thrown out, is because Molina was so in his face and he didn't want him to get thrown out.
And then, so yeah, Matheny came, I mean, came to the aid of his players, which is what a good manager does. And he just, I mean, you could kind of, I don't know if you watched the game, but you could kind of hear just, like, the yelling going back and forth. I'm like, wow, he's mad. He's really pissed off right now. And all of a sudden, he was ejected, and I'm like, I completely understand, like, getting mad about the ump calling a late time. I would get you're going out there to protect your players. You don't do that with the game on the line. You're in the ninth inning, and, you know, you're up. You're winning. And, you know, like, runners in scoring position, you have the chance to leave with a win. But, you know, you need to just, like, keep it cool, but it was a wild ninth inning. It was so much fun, and it was crazy because my grandmother had gone to bed. She never goes to bed during Red Sox games, and she picked the wrong game to go to bed because, I mean, I didn't think, as soon as Mookie hit the ball, I was like, all right, that's at least a tie game right there, and I really did not think, I thought Davey Day was going to be tagged out at home just because it looked that close.
He should have been. And
I think if Molina handled that ball, it would have been. Because you know, he completely missed the home plate at first. He just kind of went over it. And I was just like, no, oh my God. Because I couldn't see the ball, so I'm kind of like freaking out in this whole, like, it happened in 1 second, but I felt like so many emotions run through me. So I was like, where's the ball? Where's Jackie Bradley Jr.? Oh my God, why is everyone running? And it was such a fun, wild night thing. And it had everything. It had, I think I said in my recap, had an ejection, had a leadoff home run, had some drama. It was everything you wanted in a ninth inning, plus the Red Sox won. So it was perfect.
And it's funny, too, with the ejection, because it's like, of course the guy would call time. I think Brebby was standing there for like 20 seconds just holding on the ball. Like, he wasn't throwing it. And the inning took forever. I mean, the whole thing was just like so painfully long.
I was tired going into that ninth inning. I was like, oh, I really don't want to recap a loss. I had so much energy, probably up until like 2 a.m. I was just through the roof about this because I'm like, that's how you win a baseball game. This is why I love sports so much, is for games like this. So it was just so good.
And I'll give you a lot of credit too because I was camping during this, so I missed it. Don't worry, I watched the full ninth inning. Every pitch, I work later on, but I want to give you credit on a good recap because, I mean, that's what recaps are for when you miss the game, so I didn't know what happened besides everyone freaking out about it in our chat, so I got to hear you fill me in on all the details, so I know what happened because of Lauren, so if that's a little plug for your Red Sox news feed, then good, because we do every notes and every recap led by the two of us, so I hope people out there who listen to this show are also listening to our news feed because that's where we really keep up with all the day-to-day info. We got a lot of good people on it. So not to plug that, but that was a good segue because I listened to your recap without seeing the game. So pretty cool. So it was a 5-4 win. The bullpen pitched well. Barnes, Reed, and Kimbrell all pitched. None of them gave up runs. And a 5-4 win to sweep the Cardinals, which was great because, as we talked about on the last show, they were coming in hot. They had won 7 games in a row just before that, and the Sox just decided to dispatch them away and take the sweep in spectacular fashion. So that was pretty cool. You and Jared both got that right. I said 1-1 week, which, Jesus, that could have been really easily right because they just had to get a couple outs, and I would have been right. But, you know, can't win them all. So, and I'm glad I didn't win it because that's I don't want 1-1 series. I want 2-0 series if they're going to be these dumb 2-0, 2-2 game ones. So,
absolutely.
So after that, Sauce got a little nice little break, and they didn't play on Thursday, and then that brought us into Friday with the Yankees, another Yankee series, another weekend Yankee series, this time at Fenway as opposed to at New York, which the last weekend series was. So on Friday, we got a 9-6 win. This game was very wild. I'll take you through it here. It was Drew Pomeranz against Jordan Montgomery. Neither one lasted too long for different reasons. In the second inning, Rafael Devers hit another home run, two-run homer to make it 2-0. At that point, that was his 7th home run of the year, cranking up those home runs quick. He was already had as many as Bogarts in the season, and he only played for 3 weeks. So, pretty wild comparison there. And then in the fourth inning, Drew Pomeranz came out of the game due to back spasms. He went 3 1/3 innings, 4 hits, no runs. He was pitching well, but he just couldn't seem to get any momentum going, and he couldn't really, you know, follow through on his pitches very well. So he ended up coming out with back spasms. We'll get a little more of that later of what happened afterwards, but he came out, and then Jordan Montgomery came out after 5 innings after he gave up a home run to Christian Vasquez. Solo home run, absolutely destroyed. He absolutely killed it, way over the monster, to make it 3-0. And then, off the bullpen, the Yankees started coming back. Todd Frazier hit a 2-run homer in the 6th to make it 3-2. Gary Sanchez tied it in the 7th with a home run to make it 3-3. Ronald Torres made a 5-3 with a 2-RBI hit. And then Aaron Hicks got hit by a pitch to bring in the 6th run. So it was 6-3 at that point. Before we go further into the game, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me because, like, obviously the bullpen has to do a lot when the starter only goes 3 1/3 innings. Workman came in and pitched great in an inning and 2/3. Then Barnes and Kelly came up and combined for an inning, giving up 5 runs, all those runs I just talked about. So, I mean, I want to blame it on them. It's harder to because of the situation, but at the same time, like, you know, you're brought in to hold the lead. It was a 3-0 lead, and all of a sudden it's 6-3 just like that. So pretty poor outing for both of them.
And especially somebody like Joe Kelly, who we know can go longer stretches of innings, whether it's 3, 4, or 5 innings. We've seen him here as a starter, even though he didn't do too well as a starter, but we know he's capable of going those longer stretches of innings, and that's where we rely on him, because if we get into situations such as Friday night when Pomeranz had to come out with an injury, that's when John Farrell has to turn to his bullpen and be like, okay, I need somebody who can get us into the 6th or 7th inning, and Kelly's their guy. I know he can be 7th inning guy, 8th inning guy, but Joe Kelly is the guy you need to be able to turn to and be like, get us into the 6th. And he can't be giving up combined runs with somebody else. And just, I understand you're going to have bad outings no matter who you are, no matter what pitcher you are. Even Chris Sale has bad outings. But when you're not used often in a situation like this and you're only used, you know, an inning or two, that's when you really need to shine. So to see Kelly struggle this way, I was just like, oh no, like this is our guy to get us out of jams like this, and he's putting us deeper into a hole.
Yeah, I don't know if it was him pitching earlier in the game or what the problem was, but terrible. 6 hits, 5 runs, and a combined inning for the two of them. Fortunately, the Sox decided to make a comeback in the same exact 7th inning, 4 runs of their own. Betts sack fly, Benintendi RBI single, Moreland 2 RBI single to give the 7-6 lead. And then in the 8th inning, Bradley Jr. got 2 more runs on 2 RBI single to make it 9-6. I guess the funny thing about this game is that the 7th inning itself took 1 hour and 5 minutes just for both teams to score 8 runs, and then the Sox obviously got 2 more insurance runs in the 8th of our favorite pitcher in the world, Aroldis Chapman. I guess, man, I mean, Red Sox-Yankees, right? The game was flying along, like there wasn't, it was taking a pretty short amount of time, and then all of a sudden, 1 inning later, 1 hour later, now all of a sudden it's like, already like in the deep tens, already like looking on 4-hour games. So I guess that's Yankees, Red Sox-Yankees for you, right?
It absolutely is, and it's funny. I had a friend at that game that night, and I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, wow, this game's cruising. And then, you know, deep in that 7th inning, I got a text from him, and it was like, this game's taking forever. And I was like, well, that's Yankees Red Sox for you right there. I mean, that's absolutely the epitome of a Yankees-Red Sox game is how long it takes, and Paul Chapman thing, I know we're going to get into it, but I'm just so excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny with this game. I mean, the Yankees' bullpen was bad. All three guys who pitched, Chad Green, Tommy Canley, and Aroldis Chapman, all gave up two runs. And then the Sox had too many pitchers to even count. I'm going to do it anyway. Workman, Barnes, Kelly, Hembry, Scott, Reed, Kimbrell. Seven relievers. Eight? Seven? Yeah, seven.
Seven
relievers plus Pomerantz. And after Hembry came in and gave up the last of the runs in that horrible inning, Addison Reed and Craig Kimbrell both shut it down. They combined for six strikeouts. So really good to see. They're good to see Reed pitch well. And then Kimbrell obviously did his thing, 1-2-3, KKK. Not Ku Klux Klan. Strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. It's fine. I guess we shouldn't say the K's in that way, but that's what it was. It was three K's.
It was.
So, 9-6 win in this game. Put that one in the blooper reel. So three straight wins for the Red Sox, and we'll head into Saturday's game. The one game you expect to win of this series because, you know, the savior himself, Chris Sale, was pitching, and he actually didn't win, which is very weird and surprising for this season because usually he's the guy you can rely on along with Pomerantz, and not in this one. It was Sabathia against Sale. Sabathia came into the game shutting out the Red Sox in 14 innings, and he did it a little longer in this game. He held them scoreless until the fifth inning. Sale gave up his run early in the second inning, a three-run homer to Tyler Austin. Guys barely even played, and it was 3-0 Yankees. And then the Sox got two back against Sabathia, highlighted by a Jackie Bradley Jr. single. That made it 3-2. The Sox got back within one. But then Sale, uncharacteristically, in the next inning, gave up a home run to Todd Frazier to make it 4-2, and that would be the only runs he gave up. Unfortunately for him, Sox couldn't get any more after Rafael Devers hit his eighth home run of the season to make it 4-3.
Now he has more than Xander Bogaerts.
More than Xander Bogaerts at this point. And the Sox bullpen pitched well, but unfortunately they just couldn't get that last run to tie it up against David Robertson and Dylan Betances. If you notice, I didn't say Aroldis Chapman, because at this point he's no longer the closer, which we'll talk about later. He got pulled, and Betances got the save. So Chris Sale finally lost. He's 14-5. He pitched 7 innings, 7 hits, 4 runs, 9 strikeouts, 117 pitches. Not terrible, but for him it's terrible, and it ended up being a loss, unfortunately. A couple notes in this game, as I said in my recap. One, Chris Sale reached 250 strikeouts on the season. With 9, he struck out the side in the 7th inning to get those 250, and that made him the third pitcher of all time to get 250 strikeouts in 25 starts or fewer, joining Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson. Johnson did it 4 times, which is absolutely insane. Shows you how good he is. And then the other stat was Rafael Devers' 8th home run was the most home runs in the first 20 games of a career of a guy before he was 21 years old. And also, he joined Babe Ruth as the only hitter to hit 3 home runs in 3 consecutive games against the Yankees before turning age 21. Babe Ruth did it in 1915. Rafael Devers did it in 2017. So, despite the loss in this game, there's plenty of history to be had.
Which is always good. I mean, it's always good to see a silver lining in a game like that, and especially a Chris Sale loss. So, you take those positive things, especially with somebody like Devers, he's like 20 years old. He's a baby. So, and that was good to see, absolutely. And of course, Chris Sale, even with the loss, you get something positive. I feel like every loss, he still reaches a milestone. And this is a huge milestone for him. I think he's easily going to get over 300 strikeouts. I mean, this guy's just, even when he loses, he's a machine.
Oh, there's no doubt he's going to get 300. I mean, he's only 50 away. It's not even September yet. I mean, Pedro expects Sale to beat Pedro's 313 that he had in 1999. So, I mean, if Pedro thinks he's going to break it, it's his own record. And then I'm sure Sale's going to do it. And he's given us no reason to believe that he won't at this point. So that would be pretty exciting. So unfortunately a loss, so that ensured no sweep, which obviously sweeps are what really dramatically changes the standings, unfortunately. But Sunday's game, another win, a 5-1 win over the Yankees. Rick Porcello versus Sonny Gray. They both pitched well, but Porcello pitched better. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. For his 4th straight win, he's now 8-14 as opposed to the 4-14 he was. So it's exactly what we were looking for and expecting him to do, because we both know he's good, even if nobody else can seem to jump on board with that. So in this one, Jackie Bradley Jr. got a 2-RBI triple in the 2nd to make it 2-0. Brett Gardner got a homer off Porcello, his only run, in the 5th to make it 2-1. And then Bradley Jr. is back at it with an RBI single in the 6th. And Sandy Leone got a 2-RBI double for the 5-1 win in the 8th inning. So this was all about Porcello. He didn't get a ton of run support, but he got enough, and he only gave up 1 run. So that was huge. And the other thing from this game was Jerry Remy got honored before the game for 30 years in the booth. Hold your thoughts on that for now, because we're going to talk about that after the recap here. But 4 wins in a row for Porcello, I mean, people were crapping on him for pitching poorly, and now, you know, he's gotten the run support, and he's pitched pretty well still getting deep into games, and, you know, he's climbing back, and a couple more wins, he'll be closer to 500, so it's really all you can ask for.
No, absolutely. If he can finish the season at 500, I'll consider it a success, and, you know, a lot of it does come down to run support. You know, run support helps you win games, and he's pitching well. He's pitched well pretty much all season. And now he's pitching well, and he's getting that run support. So it's coming, you know, he's pitching like he did last season when he was getting all that run support. And that's what people, they can't get on the Porcello train. They have to argue like, oh, he's only a mediocre pitcher. Like, oh, okay, that's fine. But still being 500 is mediocre. And I know we've talked about it week after week. If he take his losses and take away 10 of those losses because they're 1-2 win, two-run losses, something like that. You take those and you add those to the win column, it's drastically different. And you get a drastically different pitcher if we only score runs for those 10-12 games.
Well, X said there in a week, before, I think it was before he had either of these wins. It was during his first start this week. And X was like, yeah, if you got any run support, he's easily 11-11. And he was like 6-14 at that point, or 7-14. So he's right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And, I mean, yeah, maybe 11-11 is an average season, but, you know, he hasn't pitched as well as last year, but he's certainly been dependable and reliable and getting deep into the games as he always has. So that's always something good, too. So that capped off the week. Lauren predicted it right, 2 out of 3 against the Yankees, 2 out of 2 against the Cardinals. So do your little jig over there. Me and Jerry were a little bit off, 1 game off, but you got it. Congratulations. We'll give you credit for that. That made the Sox 71-52, gave a 5-game lead again over the Yankees, so they gained 1 game in the series by taking 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3 in consecutive weekends against the Yankees, which is awesome. And that brings us up to this point. I'm not going to go into tonight's game because we'll get to that on next week's show. Unfortunately, it was a walk-off loss, 5-4 against the Indians, but we'll get to that in our predictions. So, MVP-wise this week, I don't know, it's hard. I feel like it's hard to go against Benintendi because he keeps just racking up hit after hit. I mean, the guy's hitting like 400-something in the last few weeks. It's hard to go against him. You got anybody better than him? I mean,
just give him Rookie of the Year. Just do it.
He's really getting up there. I mean, I know Judge still has like 36 homers or 38 homers or whatever he has. He's got a lot, but his average has plummeted from the 335 it was. And Benintendi's just on fire. He just hit 70 RBI. He's got 18 homers. He's hitting 279. I mean, it's hard to go against that. He had 2 hits tonight. He had 2 hits yesterday. He had several one-hit games during the week. And he's just tearing up the game. It's hard to argue with that. I think the other guy you could give it to is would be Betts for this week with his walk-off homer, his walk-off double, excuse me. And he had a 3-hit game on Tuesday, that one where he got the walk-off double. So maybe Betts. I mean, maybe you give him the edge because of the walk-off. But, I mean, everyone's obviously producing to do another 4 in 1 week. You know, the starting pitching has been good, and the offense has been good too. So really hard to go wrong with anybody, really.
Yeah, I mean, it was a full team effort this whole week. But, I mean, it's hard to go against Benintendi. Like you said, the kid is just absolutely on fire. He's just doing everything right. I know he's made a few, you know, base-running mistakes and maybe some you know, working on his fielding. But again, he's 23 years old. He's learning. He's going to learn, and he's going to make mistakes. And he's young. He's like Devers. He's a baby. He's going to, you know, he skipped through AAA. He's got to really just learn by making mistakes, and that's what Betts did. So he's going to be fine. He's just going to continue to just absolutely go on these tears that makes him so much fun to watch. Like, he's so good offensively. He's so good defensively. Like, this kid is just so much fun to watch. I love it. Every day, every week, he's just proving why he's the number one prospect in all of baseball.
Yeah, and Devers also, several two-hit games, a couple home runs. We'll get to him even more in a minute. So a lot of possibilities this week. Everyone just kind of spread around the wealth, the good playing wealth. And our least valuable player goes to Aroldis Chapman, and we'll get to that more too, because he just blows, yes. And it's great. So there's your recap. That is brought to you by SeatGeek. The SeatGeek ticketing app has the smartest and easiest way to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. You can get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. All you have to do is download the free SeatGeek app on your phone, go to the setting tabs, and go to add a promo code, and enter Garden Report, all one word. GardenReport. If you didn't know how to spell Garden Report, that's how you spell it. Just tell them who sent you. Obviously, us here at Red Sox Beat on CLNS Media. So make sure you go get your $20 off of SeatGeek. It's a great thing. Saves you a little cash on your wallet. So make sure you go do that for us. So let's move on to some headlines. Obviously, one of the biggest headlines still, because, you know, he's only been here for a month. He got called up on July 24th. That's obviously Rafael Devers. We're here on August 21st, and he's now up to 8 home runs. He's getting that history like we talked about. And, I mean, it's, I guess the biggest thing with him to me, just like Andrew Benintendi, is that he doesn't seem to let the spotlight get to him ever. He just stays in the zone. He stays ready, and he makes adjustments, and he doesn't seem to crack at all, which is wild because he was just in AA a couple weeks ago, basically, and he's 20 years old, and he's playing well in the field, and he's hitting the crap out of the ball. It's incredible.
It is, and I know I was very skeptical about the Red Sox bringing him up so soon, and, you know, mainly a lot of it was his age, and he had a lot of defensive errors. I knew he can hit the hell out of the ball, and he's proving that now, but I was very skeptical, and just every day that passes, he proves me wrong, and it just makes me so happy, because this is something I'm very happy to be wrong about, because, you know, if he came up here and absolutely failed, or if he was like a Moncada kind of thing, it would have crushed his confidence completely, and you don't want to do that when he's only 20 years old, and he has so much potential, and he's just proving now that, just like Benintendi, he's got the poise, and he's got late patience, he gets the crap out of the ball, and he's doing really good things at third base. And so I love watching him, and I love watching him in the field. I love watching him at the plate. And it just makes me, again, I'll repeat myself 100 times over, I'm happy I was wrong about this kid. And I think he's going to do great things. I think this is just like the tip of the iceberg with him. I think he's going to have fantastic numbers next season. And he's already crushing the ball. He has more homers than Xander Bogaerts. He hasn't been here for a month.
Insane. I mean, he hasn't gotten a hit in his last two games, and it's like, what's wrong with him? Nobody's worried because he just bounces right back, but it's like, you're shocked when he doesn't get a hit in the game because he's gotten so many hits. So it's pretty cool stuff. So love to see what he's doing to help this team, and the team's playing well without Dustin Pedroia and David Price. And good timing for that because we got an update on both of them today. If you listen to my pregame notes today, you'll know what the deal is here. But if you missed that, David Price played lawn toss after not throwing for 5 days because they shut him down because of soreness. He threw today. He threw up to 60 feet, which was more than he's done in a little while. And then Dustin Pedroia also ran and did some agility drills today. So certainly no timetable on either of them, but it seems like good news for both of them at this point.
Yeah, definitely good news. And I think at this point you can't risk either, you know, furthering either of their injuries or prolonging when they're going to come back. I think at this point you just wait to the playoffs because that's when you're going to really, really need them. And I know the team's playing well without them. They're still in first place. They have that lead over the Yankees. But you just don't want to rush people, like, especially for Pedroia. You know, he's the veteran of this team. He's really he's supposed to be that voice in the clubhouse. And I don't see them making a big run especially without Fajoy, because he's that heart of the team, especially in situations like a playoff game. And, you know, it's a knee injury. Those things, knee injuries are extremely tricky. We go over this all the time on this show. And especially with Price, I don't think it's even worth risking him, because they're going to bring him back and say he has a crap outing and still the regular season. It's not going to be good for him mental-wise. And, you know, he's going to go on Twitter and he's going to freak out about it. He's going to have a meltdown over it. So you put him in the playoffs where, as much as I hate saying this, like, you almost expect him to lose just because of his record, it's going to be okay. But I don't think he's going to risk that right now. Great news for the both of them. Don't bring him back into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Lou Maloney on CSN's early edition. He said that he fully expects if Price comes back that he'll pitch one game and then get hurt and then miss the rest of the season. Like, he had no confidence that he would be able to stay here. And it's hard to have it with Price with this elbow, since it's just lingering, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, he's going to come back soon. Oh, just kidding. Actually, he's not going to throw anymore, and he's going to shut him down for a couple days. All right, now he's throwing again. Like, what's going to happen next? 3 days from now, are they going to shut him down again? Like, how do you have any confidence in this guy? And it's hard to want him to not come back to the playoffs, because, like you said, he's terrible in the playoffs. And it's like, here, you're coming back for the first time in 2 months. Here's a playoff start for you. Like, I feel like that's risky. I don't know. I almost don't want him to come back. I just feel like it's better without. I mean, maybe the rotation is too shaky without him, but I'm super hesitant about it.
I mean, I'm hesitant about it too, but then I just think, like, who else is there? I mean, I know you can pitch Sale on 3 or 4 days rest, but you don't want to burn his arm out if they get past the first round. Doug Fister, no. Like, I don't even want to say his name. And then, you know, Brian Johnson, you know, he's really, like, the only person you can really depend on to call up. I'm not saying he's, like, super dependable, but you go through that rotation, and it's just like, who else is there? You got Fister to come in as, you know, not a permanent fix, but a quick rental, and he's not doing anything right. I don't want that guy in a playoff situation. I'd rather just walk on the TV, like, nope, just let me know when the game's over, let me know the score. I don't want to know Fister's final line. And it scares me, like, because this rotation is shaky without Price, and it's kind of shaky with him too, especially in the playoffs. So.
I don't think it's shaky without him. I just think it's more unpredictable, just because you don't know what's gonna, you know, like Trenny said last week, you don't know if Pomerantz is gonna pitch well in the playoffs. You don't know if Erod's gonna pitch well in the playoffs. Sale's never pitched in the playoffs. I don't think that means anything personally, but I think they've all pitched well. It's hard to know who you're going to rely upon, because, like, Erod's so inconsistent. We see that several times where he gets a 5 great innings, and the 6th inning he gives up 4 runs, or he gives up 4 runs in the 2nd inning and then pitches great the rest of the game. It's really hard to tell with him, so I think it's more unpredictable with these guys. But in terms of Price and Pedroia, I mean, this may seem like a dumb question, but, like, do you think that the team has played so much better this month? You know, 4 losses in August, and it's August 21st. They played better because they're not playing because of that, or is it just coincidence?
I mean, I hate to say that they're playing better because Pedroia is not in the lineup or because Bryce isn't pitching, but what I'm going to go back to is that whole debacle with Price and Dennis Eckersley on the plane, and Pedroia was one of the people who supposedly applauded. And, you know, you take those two out of the lineup, who were kind of like the cancers of the team for that week or two, that whole dramatic team. You take those two out of the equation, all of a sudden we're playing really, really good baseball. And I don't know if it's just, you know, the team's just meshing well, it's late in the season, they're really just getting their asses in gear. I don't know if it's that. I mean, I don't like thinking it has to do with Pedroia and Price not being in this lineup, but they're still at the games. They're still, you know, in the clubhouse. They're still there with everyone. And I don't know. I think this team has really good chemistry right now. And I mean, I don't know. I think it's not, I don't really think it's a coincidence. I hate saying that, but I just don't think it is.
I lean more towards it being a coincidence, because also that was the point when Devers came up and when Benintendi got a couple of days off and started going on his tear, and obviously they've been tearing it up together, and then Nunez got here a week later with the trade. So I don't think it's necessarily because of that. I'm not willing to throw Pedroia in that because of one incident. I'm not ready to rid my allegiance of him. I think you're much better off with him. Price, not so sold about that.
Price can go.
You might be better off without him, yeah. So maybe Price, but in terms of Pedroia, I think that's a total coincidence. Just the players you got in his place and playing in the infield just happen to be incredible at that point. So I'm kind of going more coincidence, but it is a little bit interesting.
And there's no doubt that the way Pedroia plays this game, he gives everything every single game. And I love the way he plays. I've always loved the way he plays. He plays the game the right way. And I know you said the people who came up in his spot are just really exceeding expectations. So, I mean, I don't want to say it has anything to do with, like, them not playing Price. Yeah, maybe. But Pedroia, I love the way that guy plays the game. I just hate even thinking that he's out of the lineup for so X amount of games. And we've only lost four times. So I'm really on the fence. But, like I said, the way Pedroia plays the game, there's no denying he's playoff second baseman every single year. So, I don't know. Price, yeah, whatever. Get rid of him. I don't care. But
we'll just be happy that they went on this run when it happened, and that no matter what reason it happened for, we'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good one.
I say we'll leave it at that. We'll talk about the bullpen here. I mean, Joe Kelly and Matt Barnes have both been really, really bad for the last couple weeks here, especially Barnes. He can't seem to throw strikes. He can't seem to get three outs in an inning. The talk is now that Carson Smith should be ready to join the roster in early September, which is soon. Like, September 1st is coming up, so that's great news. Do you see him, like, slotting in and pitching instead of having Kelly and Barnes pitch so much? Because it seems like they basically pitch every game, especially Barnes, so, like, can Farrell get off of his, like, Matt Barnes love fest where he needs to pitch him every game and he never does well? Like, I mean, obviously Smith joining changes things, but, like, you can't pitch Matt Barnes so much right now, right? He can't get an out.
I want to say, yes, absolutely, it's going to be Carson Smith who comes in and takes over that, but we got Addison Reed for the eighth inning and we're putting Matt Barnes in there. And I say every week, I'm a Farrell person. I'm not on this fire Farrell train. And I never have been. I probably never will be. But you get these guys like Addison Reed who comes in for the eighth inning and you don't use him. Matt Barnes is terrible on the road. Absolutely terrible. His ERA is like 5,000. And every game he's still in there. And it's like, it's that feeling where it's like, okay, there goes the game because here comes Matt Barnes. Especially with a one-run lead. I almost feel like Don Farrell should take the Clay Buchholz approach from last year and the year before, where he's like, yeah, we'll use Buchholz when we have a significant lead. Okay, use Barnes when you have a significant lead, because he's not good. And it makes me so mad, because Addison Reed pitched well the last game or two. And I know Kelly hasn't pitched well, but you can't keep going to Barnes, because he's so unreliable. And if Carson Smith comes back and he's not going to get time, he's not going to get, you know, an eighth inning or a seventh inning, and he's still going to go to Barnes, I am not going to know what to do. I'm going to absolutely lose my mind about Farrell. And I'm on a short lease with him. Or he's on a short lease with me. And, you know, you and I have been two of his biggest supporters all season, really his whole tenure here. And it's just, it's getting harder and harder to trust Farrell when he keeps putting in Barnes. Like, why? Why are you putting in Barnes? That's all I want to know. I just want to give him a call and be like, please have a talk.
Yeah, it's hard to defend his moves because it's like, it just seems like he throws a guy out there, like, willy-nilly. He's like, yeah, I mean, you pitch today. Yeah, you go out there. Like, it doesn't matter what the situation in the game is. It doesn't matter what the score is. It's just like, he's like, yeah, sure. Go pitch. Yeah, you too. You go pitch. Oh, you're unavailable today? All right, cool. We'll pitch you tomorrow. It's just like, but then Barnes pitches, like, every game. It's like, is he ever unavailable? I just don't understand. It's hard to defend the order. I mean, he did well with it earlier in the year. They pitched well. Like, it seemed to work pretty well. But then, just like, the last, like, two or three weeks, it just seems like he forgot how to manage a bullpen, and it's showing. They're giving up runs. They haven't pitched well, and I still think it's a good bullpen overall. I do think that it's hard to rely on any of them besides Kimbrel at this point, because they haven't given as much reason in the last couple of weeks. But it's just, like, there's no plan, it seems like. It's just, like, whoever he sees at the moment, it's like, oh, I saw you first. We'll throw you in. Oh, you won the card game last night. I'll throw you in this game. It's just like, it seems like he just picks randomly. I don't understand And I don't know where Carson Smith's going to fit into there, but yeah, it's like you want a set thing, like general, like you're going to pitch here, you're going to pitch here, you got this inning, you got that inning, and it's, at this point, it's just pretty much like, hey, Barnes, you go here and pitch. And I've defended Barnes a lot the last couple of years, and I think he is a good pitcher, but if you're that inconsistent home versus road and you can't throw strikes, I mean, the eighth inning's not a place to be walking the first two batters every game.
No. I mean, you said everything. You took the words right out of my mouth. It's I don't know. I wish I could sit here and defend Farrell in putting Barnes in game after game, but I just can't, especially on the road. Especially on the road when you know he's not good. So, I don't know. Like you said, I don't understand why he's never unavailable either. You know, at a spring, he's not available. He pitches two games in a row, and he's not available. Matt Barnes pitches 62 games in a row, and he's available for the 63rd game. It makes no sense.
It doesn't. And for anybody who's been riding us constantly for being fans of Farrell, you're hearing it here. We're not defending him here. We're not saying that he's doing well with the bullpen because we're not sure what he's doing. So you can take that with you. We try to be realistic, and we watch the games, and we see that they've blown several games, and he's not making good decisions. So I wouldn't want the job either, but, you know, he has it, so you got to do it. Unfortunately, that's how it works. To better things, before we get to MLB headlines, Jerry Remy got honored for 30 years in the Nesson booth on Sunday, and they had a ceremony. They brought him out. He got a lot of presents. He got a glass vase. He got a huge autographed glove. He got a TV. He got even a couple other things. They gave him a lot of stuff. Fenway. What's that?
Two seats from Fenway.
That's
they gave him a blue one.
Yes, the seats. Good old seats. So a lot of stuff for him. He made a little speech, said he'll be back for next season, he hopes. He starts chemotherapy on Tuesday here, tomorrow, if you're listening on Monday. Actually, it's already past midnight, so you're listening on Tuesday, so today. I mean, it was a great ceremony. Yeah, clearly the fans love him and want him back. I know I go back and forth on him as an announcer, and, like, you know, we've heard him for so long that it's like you've pretty much heard what you can hear, but just to know how much he loves broadcasting and how, like, it's what he looks forward to and stuff. It's hard to not root for the guy to come back next year.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I know he hasn't undergone the chemo yet, but he looked great, you know, smiling. And his speech was perfect. And I posted about this on my Instagram, but he thanked the camera crew and the production crew. And what really stood out, like, you never hear the camera people or the production crew getting thanked. And, you know, you've worked on set with me before. It's long days. We're there, you know, 7 a.m., 7 to 8 a.m. for an 8 o'clock start, and we're there till 2, 3 in the morning, and it's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and just to have him recognize that was really cool, because, you know, the announcers, they have to get there pretty early, too, but they get to go home as soon as their hits are done, and, you know, we'll record their hits and do their live shots, whatever, for the game, and then there's still 2 or 3 more hours worth of work to be done, and they're already home in bed. So it was just cool to kind of get, like, recognized, for him to recognize the people who do so much work behind the scenes for somebody who's in front of the camera, you know, 24/7. So it was definitely great to see him out there smiling, happy. His shout out to Don Orsillo definitely wanted to make me cry a little bit inside. It was perfect ceremony. It wasn't overdone or anything. It was perfect.
Thank God Jared's not here to talk about ceremonies. We know how much he loves those. Yeah. No, I thought it was great, too. It was good. I think when he was in the booth with Dave on the first couple innings, his voice sounded a little bit weak. I don't know if you agree, but he cleared his throat a couple of times. He didn't sound fantastic, which is a little concerning, but maybe that's just the remaining things that are in there that the chemo will get rid of. So hopefully he can get better with that. But, man, if you're going to be determined to do it, he's been dealing with this for a long time, and he wants to come back next year, so... We'll just
when the Red Sox raise a banner.
When the Red Sox raise a banner, yep. Bold statement. Lauren Campbell special. So that
it
was.
It sure is.
So that was great to see. Great to have him come back. He was looking forward to it. And now he can go battle the cancer and hopefully come back soon. So good luck to you, Jerry. Let's move on to some headlines. Our biggest headline is Aroldis Chapman. Is now out as the Yankees closer. You're not going to find two people who dislike Chapman more than the two of us. Because he's a dirtbag, as we've talked about plenty on this show. And really, I mean, what I've said over and over again is I don't think I've seen this guy pitch well in, like, 2 years. Like, he used to be great when nobody cared when he was on the Reds, but the last couple of years, I mean, he blew several games to the Cubs last year. He's basically blown every game he's pitched against the Red Sox in the last 2 years. And I guess finally Joe Girardi decided, you're right, Jess, he isn't good. I'm not going to have him be my closer anymore. So I hate it because I want him to stay in there and blow games, but geez, for the Yankees' sake, what took so long?
I know, he's terrible, and I think I said it last week when I was at the Red Sox-Yankee series, he blew the game then, Friday night, he blew the game, and it's just like, how many games does this guy have to blow for you to pull him? And I get, you know, he's your closer, he's your multi-million dollar closer, you want to think, like, oh, maybe it's just like a few kinks he needs to work on, maybe it's just whatever, but, you know, it's funny, you know, so many people just crap all over him for you know, being just dirtbag outside of the field and all those legal issues or whatever, but it was great. Like I said, I had a friend at the game Friday night, and he said there was a huge Chapman fan, huge Yankees fan in his section, and he was like, oh, it's like I've been taunting them all night about Chapman, like, imagine being able to throw 100 miles an hour and you can't find the strike zone. And it's like, when you do find the strike zone, you're throwing 103 miles an hour, and you're getting destroyed by children. Like, 20-year-old Garfield Nevers, 23-year-old Andrew Benintendi. Like, this veteran closer is supposed to be one of the, you know, all the props can throw 103 miles an hour. His arm has to be tired, I get it. But you're supposed to be one of the best closers in the league. And you're getting your career handed to you by, you can, no, he probably can beat Nevers' dad. But you're getting destroyed by kids, by, like, people who watched you. The last, like, well, as they were teenagers, and now you're getting lit up by them, and it makes me so happy, because you know how I feel personally about Chapman. He's just, he's a piece of garbage, and if he was, you know, a really good pitcher, and he, you know, he has been before, but if he came out there and he could prove he was the closer that he's supposed to be, I'd be like, okay, I can, like, he's a good pitcher, whatever, but he's, it just makes it all the better for me, because I'm like, oh, okay, so you're a scumbag outside the diamond. You can't pitch, and you can throw 103 miles an hour, but you cannot locate the plate, and you're getting your ass handed to you by a 23-year-old and a 20-year-old. I love it. It makes me really, really happy.
You gotta love relishing in someone else's pain, right?
Nope. I mean, he's a millionaire, too, so I don't even feel bad, not even a little bit.
Right, he's only 29 years old, believe it or not. He looks like he's about 40, but...
Jeez, he looks like he's 36.
I know, I thought he was way older than that, I just checked, but he's only 29, so...
Wow, so, okay.
I guess when you throw that hard, you age quickly.
I guess so, wow. Oof.
He's got the arm of a 38-year-old, yeah, so...
He's the same age as Joe Kelly.
Right. It's crazy.
And Joe Kelly looks like he's 23.
Yeah. So throwing 103 ages you, and... having all your domestic violence problems. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens, but you know, you can't be that wild as a closer. You can only get the job done. And now they have Betances, and he's kind of wild too, but he doesn't throw 103, and he's not a basket case. So we'll see if it works out for them. I hope it doesn't. I hope neither of them work out. But we're Red Sox fans, so why wouldn't we say that? One other strange MLB headline before we move on to predictions. An odd thing, Ian Kinsler got fined because he told Angel Hernandez, the umpire, that he should, like, get a different job. And it hurt his feelings. And then the umpires, as, like, association or whatever it is, they came out with this thing to have wristbands, or armbands, I guess, what they really were, to, like, protect against umpire violence and because of that situation. So... I don't know, do you feel like it's reactionary to have this one? I mean, obviously people are on umpires all the time, but to then have this happen and then be like, all right, we're gonna protect ourselves against violence. It's like, you think they'd be used to the abuse by now, that's terrible, but I mean, why this incident?
I wish I knew, and I think violence is like the absolute wrong word for them to be using, especially everything that else is going on in this country right now. But it's, I mean, said was find a different career path or whatever he said. It's he didn't, you know, personally attack him. He didn't call him names. He didn't, you know, there was nothing there that would like fuel like, that violent. And you know, umpires have been, if who was the umpire who blew the perfect game. Oh my gosh, I think it was the Tigers.
Jim Joyce.
Yep, Jim Joyce. He came out. And he was like, "Yeah, my bad. I screwed up the call." And you know, I'm sure there were a lot of angry. Of course, there were a lot of angry fans over that. But I mean, get the calls right. You're getting paid, like, starting $90,000 a year to stand behind home plate. Get your calls right, especially with, you know, plays at first, and, you know, they have the instant replay now. But, I mean, there's been some awful calls, god-awful calls, and I know you sit here and you can't be like, oh, you can't blame the umpire for every game, or when the umpire's, like, maybe seem they're going against one team more than the other. They've been so inconsistent this year, and if you're going to wear armbands to, like, protest violence, get your calls right. You won't be getting managers in your face. You won't be getting people swearing at you. And it's, you know, it comes with it. You're going to piss people off in that field. No pun intended there, but it's just, like, violence. And I don't understand what the armbands are doing. Like, cool, like, you guys are standing up for yourselves or whatever. That's great. But it's not, I don't see it doing anything. Like, the players are going to come out and be like, oh, like, what's a wrist gang going to do? I just don't get it.
Yeah. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I'm not sure I understand it either. So we'll leave it at that. On to the predictions. See if Lauren can get 3 straight weeks. That'd be pretty impressive.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah. Well, no, first 2 times were a charm.
Oh, so man, I don't know. They're going to need a lot of wins with my prediction already.
Yeah, no kidding. 4 versus the Indians on the road, and then 3 at home versus the Orioles. Obviously, 2 hot teams coming into the series. Sox have won 14 of 17. The Indians have won 8 of 10. So 2 very hot teams coming in, and obviously the first game is a one-run game and a walk-off. So should be a great series. We did get Jared's predictions, even though he's not here. He said win 3 of 4 from Cleveland and win 2 of 3 from the Orioles, so that's what he does. Obviously, the first game in the books now, but these predictions are made beforehand, so what do you have for the Indian series?
I am right there with Jared. I think they're going to win 3 out of 4. I know tonight didn't start off too well. I mean, this game could have gone either way tonight. I know we talked about it a little bit tonight. We'll talk more about it next week when we get into my third straight week of correct predictions, but I just think the Red Sox are just meshing so well right now, and I know the Indians, even the Orioles, are very good. They're, you know, Indians with the AL, they swept the slasher in the ALDS, so I get it. They're both very good teams. They're both teams that we need to win against. And I said this last week, they need to win against the Yankees, and they just need to collect these wins, especially going into September. And it's just, they're meshing well. The pitching's working, the offense is working, and I just think that they're going to really string together some really important wins. And now we're getting to that part of the season where every week we're saying, this is an important week, this is an important week. This is an extremely important week, especially against two American League opponents.
No doubt. I have a split with Cleveland, 2-2. Feeling pretty good about that after this one tonight. I just feel like two really good teams, very similar records, 2 of 3 best teams in the American League. I think you take a split on the road. I don't think that's terrible. The road's a hard place to win. The Sox are 31-31 on the road, so I think a sweep is fair there. A split, excuse me.
yes, a sweep.
Not a sweep. That's not even possible anymore. So yeah, I got 2-2 in that series. And then I have a sweep of the Orioles. They're playing slightly better. I mean, they're playing better than the Rays at this point. They've overtaken them in the standings by 0.5 game, 61-64. But they're not a good team. They haven't been for a while. They're even worse on the road. If you're playing them on the road, that'd be different because they're a good home team, but they're an awful road team, 15 under .500. So I have a sweep of the Orioles because I think after splitting with Cleveland in a tough 4-game series, you come home and you just unload on the Orioles. So 5-2 week, sweep the Orioles. What do you got?
I have a 6-1 week because I feel like they're going to sweep the Orioles. And like I said, they're just terrible, terrible road team. And I'm feeling good about the Red Sox being home after being on the road against Cleveland. I'm just feeling good about them coming home and just absolutely destroying the Orioles. They play a lot. They play each other a lot every season. But I just have a really good feeling about this. And like I said, these are important series, and they're going to string together these important wins. And I just see a nice 6-1 week to just kind of close out August.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to get 6 straight wins now if you want that to be right. So. Your streak is on the line. But yeah, the Orioles, I mean, they're not in the playoff chase. Just pound them into the ground and get your wins. That's what we're hoping for.
Sure is.
All right, that will do it here on Red Sox Beat this week. Once again, Twitter, RedSox_beat, at CLNS Media on Twitter. Follow us. You can follow me at CLNS_JessSangin. You can follow Lauren at LaLaLaLaLaLaLaLaLaLaLaLaEN.
Three laws, four R's.
I said it right. It just sounded weird.
You did. Fun follow. I'm a fun follow.
Yes, follow her. She has a lot more followers than me. So if you want to be nice to me, follow me. I'll take it. So that's that. Red Sox Beat. Make sure you get that SeatGeek $20 off Garden Report. Get your $20 off your next purchase, concert, or sports game. Pick sports. Sports are the best. Concerts are great, though. I saw John Mayer last night, and boy, he's good. My God.
Love John Mayer.
So good. So if you want to see John Mayer, $20 off. It already happened. Find another concert. If you want to go to a sporting event, do that. So that'll do it for us here. Jared will be back next week. Hope you're feeling better, Jared. Telling you a lot for the weather. For Lauren Campbell, Jess Thomas, Jess Lockheed here on CLNS Media. Have a good night.